criminales es peor que eso. Ellos son los que permiten que los criminales actúen impunemente en este país.
Para el Informativo Pacífica, reportó Lolita Macías.
Agentes norteamericanos encubiertos han lavado millones de dólares producto de ventas de drogas de los capos mexicanos, dicen exoficiales de la Policía Antinarcóticos estadounidense. Según los oficiales, las acciones han sido realizadas en un intento de averiguar la forma en que las organizaciones mueven su dinero, dónde mantienen sus propiedades y, más importante, quiénes son sus líderes. Víctor Quintana es integrante de la Red de Defensores de Derechos Humanos y del Frente Democrático Campesino en el estado de Chihuahua, en el noreste mexicano.
Se están beneficiando los narcotraficantes y sus aliados voluntarios o involuntarios, eso es indudable. Para perseguirlos, según esto, les dan más armas, les dan más dinero, que son sus principales puntos débiles, los fortalecen en lugar de perseguirlos. No entendemos nosotros cómo los Estados Unidos y el gobierno de México haya aceptado tal estrategia.
Ginger Thompson, en un reporte especial para el New York Times, dice que los agentes han depositado las ganancias de la droga en cuentas bancarias designadas por los traficantes o en cuentas creadas por los mismos agentes. Los oficiales dijeron que mientras la DEA conducía esas operaciones en otros países, en los últimos años empezó a hacer lo mismo en México. Quintana señala que la fallida estrategia no ha tenido los resultados anunciados por las autoridades involucradas, a menos que la razón sea poner a Washington como líder del narcotráfico.
Sigue la cuota ahí aumentando, sigue la gente aterrorizada en las calles, en los caminos. La estrategia no ha funcionado para México. Posiblemente para Estados Unidos sí. Posiblemente Estados Unidos esté tomando control total del negocio narcotráfico.
El Times subraya que mientras que la agencia DEA lava dinero, frecuentemente permite que los cárteles continúen sus operaciones por meses y hasta por años antes de realizar confiscaciones o arrestos. Los oficiales declinaron discutir detalles de su trabajo en público, diciendo que eso pondría en riesgo las investigaciones.
Hacerse de ese pingüe negocio ha sido siempre el objetivo de los Estados Unidos, acabar con los cárteles para convertirse él en el máximo cártel, en el que realmente maneje el dinero y la droga.
Otro ex empleado de la Policía Antinarcóticos norteamericana que pidió anonimidad por hablar de cosas delicadas en público dijo: mi regla era que si íbamos a lavar dinero, mejor sería mostrar resultados. De otra manera, la DEA podría convertirse en el mecanismo de lavado de dinero más grande de la industria y el resultado sería violencia y muertes.
¿Quién sabe si se lavó realmente esa cantidad? ¿Cuánta se quedó en el camino? ¿Quiénes, además de los narcotraficantes, fueron los beneficiarios entre los intermediarios oficiales? Creo que esto se presta a muchísima corrupción. Indudablemente que no hay transparencia, no hay rendición de cuentas, sino hay únicamente leaks, únicamente hay filtraciones, pero no una rendición de cuentas que la democracia exige.
Lo publicado por el New York Times agrega leña al fuego de la desconfianza y alienta el debate sobre los planes que tiene Washington para aumentar la supervisión y control sobre Norteamérica a nivel militar y político. Desde a principios del año, los detalles de la operación Rápido y Furioso mostraban que, con autorización de las más altas esferas del gobierno norteamericano, la Agencia sobre Alcohol, Tabaco, Armas de Fuego y Explosivos, la ATF, facilitó la introducción de miles de armas de alto calibre, en gran parte para el cartel de Sinaloa de Joaquín El Chapo Guzmán.
Esto de que los están introduciendo la droga para darle seguimiento a la pista de cuál es la senda del dinero, pues se puede creer hasta cierto punto, pero por otro lado tiene muchos beneficiarios en el ínterin, en el proceso.
No obstante las cuantiosas sumas de dinero esparcidas entre agentes de policía norteamericanos, se sigue tratando de vender el mito de que la corrupción solo predomina al sur de la frontera, en el lado mexicano. Un oficial de la DEA dijo que era común ver que los agentes estadounidenses tomaran 2 o 3 cargamentos de dinero de narcodólares cada semana. Respondiendo a la pregunta de cuánto dinero ha sido lavado por los agentes, este se limitó a decir que mucho.
La ayuda que brinda Estados Unidos pues es muy dudosa, porque acá, nosotros aquí sí estamos viviendo el terror de todos estos años, con los narcotraficantes más agresivos que nunca, con muchos inocentes muertos, con periodistas y defensores y defensoras de derechos humanos asesinados por exigir la justicia. Estas estrategias están funcionando posiblemente para el interés, no de los Estados Unidos, del gobierno norteamericano, no del pueblo norteamericano.
Los exoficiales dijeron al Times que los agentes mexicanos, pretendiendo ser contrabandistas y acompañados por autoridades norteamericanas, recogían dinero de narcotraficantes en México. Luego, los agentes estadounidenses transportaban el dinero en vuelos del gobierno a los Estados Unidos, donde era depositado en cuentas bancarias de narcotraficantes y después enviado a compañías que proveen servicios y artículos para los cárteles.
El dinero, yo pienso que no se lava tanto de allá para acá. Yo creo que el dinero se lava más de aquí para allá. La tubería de dinero de allá para acá tiene una pulgada de ancho, de diámetro, y la tubería de dinero de aquí para allá tiene 10 pulgadas de ancho, para explicar de una manera gráfica.
El Times también señala que en algunos casos agentes de la DEA, pretendiendo ser lavadores de dinero, recogían el efectivo en Estados Unidos, lo depositaban en bancos norteamericanos y luego lo transferían a los narcotraficantes en México. Los exagentes dijeron que las agencias federales trataron de obtener aprobación del Departamento de Justicia para lavar cantidades en exceso de 10 millones de dólares.
Yo pienso que el gobierno de México, hasta cierto punto, no tuvo más. Un gobierno con poco apoyo popular no tuvo más que aceptar esa estrategia impuesta por los Estados Unidos. Y pensó que iba a funcionar bien, entonces dijo, con esto me pliego a la estrategia norteamericana y quedo bien con mi población. Pues sí, se plegó a la estrategia norteamericana. Los Estados Unidos puede ser que estén recogiendo los beneficios de su estrategia, pero en México los puros perjuicios. Y el gobierno de Calderón está tremendamente cuestionado por esto.
Hasta el momento no hay ninguna señal de que siguiendo el rastro del dinero ha llevado a la destrucción de las operaciones de los cárteles. El año pasado la DEA confiscó 1,000 millones de dólares en efectivo y en bienes, mientras que México confiscó como 26 millones de dinero en investigaciones de lavado. Esto es una pequeña fracción de los 18 a 39 mil millones de dólares que fluyen entre los dos países cada año. Víctor Quintana advierte que aparte de tener la fórmula mágica para fortalecer su debilitada economía con narcodólares, los Estados Unidos también están avanzando su agenda geopolítica en la región norte del continente.
Continúan con las aseveraciones de que hay vinculación entre el terrorismo islámico y algunos grupos de narcotraficantes mexicanos. Este tipo de aseveraciones lo que hacen es preparar el clima mental, el clima de opinión para una intervención mayor todavía de los Estados Unidos en México. Hacia allá va. Y ahora que se han descubierto grandes reservas de gas en el norte de México y mineras en el noroeste de México, pues con mucha más razón.
Víctor Quintana es integrante de la Red de Defensores de Derechos Humanos y del Frente Democrático Campesino en el estado de Chihuahua, en el noreste mexicano. En tanto, Sergio Ferragut, profesor del Instituto Tecnológico Autónomo de México, dice que su país todavía piensa que la mejor manera de confiscar dinero sucio es arrestando a un narcotraficante y luego tomándolo por los pies y sacudiéndolo para ver cuánto dinero cae de sus bolsillos. Por su parte, los bancos de Estados Unidos y sus aliados europeos continúan lucrando con dinero de la venta de heroína proveniente de Afganistán y cocaína producida en Colombia, dos países dominados política y militarmente por Washington. La Unión Americana tiene poco más del 5% de la población mundial y consume más del 60% de las drogas ilegales del planeta. Sociólogos, psicoanalistas y psiquiatras se siguen preguntando de qué huyen o qué tratan de ocultar los estadounidenses con tanto consumo. ¿Consumo de drogas? ¿En qué clase de infierno viven que se ven obligados a encontrar el paraíso terrenal en la drogadicción? En Los Ángeles. Yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. A nombre de Maide Alfonso, Norma Martínez y el director del proyecto Fernando Velázquez, se despide de ustedes Rolando Solano. Gracias por acompañarnos.
And coming up next on freakradio.org at 101.3 FM, it's Bathrob Spears Broadsides with all the latest on the latest police state activities sweeping away the Occupy Santa Cruz River Street campground and the, all the details as it comes up. Stay tuned.
me, mister, do you have the time? Or are you so important that it stands still for you? Excuse me, mister, won't you lend me your ear? Or are you not only blind, but do you not hear? Excuse me, mister, but isn't that your oil in the sea? And the pollution in the air, mister, whose could that be? So excuse me, mister, but I'm a mister too. And you're giving mister the bad name, mister like you. Now I'm taking the mister from out in front of your name, 'cause it's a mister like you puts the rest of us to shame. It's a mister like you puts the rest of us to shame. And I have seen enough. Lord, I've seen it, I've seen it. I've seen enough to know that I have seen too much. Excuse me, mister, can't you see the children dying? You say that you can't help them, mister, you're not. Excuse me, mister, won't you take a look around? Mister, just look up and you will see what's coming down. Lord, excuse me, mister, but I'm a mister too. And you're giving mister a bad name, mister like you. Now I'm taking the mister from out in front of your name, 'cause it's a mister, mister like you puts the rest of us to shame. It's a mister like you who puts the rest of us to shame. And I have seen enough. Lord, I've seen it, I've seen it. I've seen enough to know that I have seen too much. I've seen enough. Lord, I have seen enough to know that I have seen too much. See, 'cause mister, when you're rattling on heaven's gate, oh, let me tell you, mister, by then it is too late. See, 'cause mister, when you get there, they don't ask what you saved. All they wanna know, mister, is what you gave. So excuse me, mister, but I'm a mister too. And you're giving mister bad name, mister like you. And I'm taking the mister from out in front of your name, 'cause a mister like you puts the rest of us, Lord, the rest of us.
And that was a little something from No Copyright, a indiemedia.org disc. The singer was Ben Harper. Excuse me, mister. It was a live show, and it looks like it's an older one, too. But still kind of fun, or enjoyable to listen to. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris. The name of the show is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. usually focusing on civil rights for poor and homeless people, or wherever we can find them, how we can restore them, where we can establish them. And, of course, this these days is spreading to the lack of civil liberties and civil rights for anybody and everybody in Santa Cruz. That's sort of became clear. It's become clear in the last few days as the police have moved to use force to remove political protesters and those who are supporting them. That happened most recently, of course, this morning with the River Street Campground. And there's not a lot of good information on that that's been put up online yet that I've seen. Though there are some websites that suggest people check out Occupy Santa Cruz. Occupy Santa Cruz Facebook, again, not a lot there. I understand IndieBay.org is hopefully going to have something soon. If it doesn't already, I'm going to take a quick look there now. That's Santa Cruz Indie Media, and that's worth taking a look at. The Sentinel, of course, has the police department's version and the Sentinel reporter's version, which, you know, is certainly you must consider all versions. I see there are some stories up on Occupy, or I should say on IndieBay.org, and also I believe some photos, which I actually haven't had a chance to look at yet. I've been running around all day doing different things or crashing out in a heap. Yeah, there's some photos with the most latest story, police raid and destroy Occupy Santa Cruz encampment in San Lorenzo Park on Santa Cruz Indie Media. Lines of riot police with helmets. And the, gosh, quite a selection of photos. It's quite dramatic, the amount of police pressure and presence there was today down there in the morning. I'm going to be kind of work through this myself because I stayed there last night, actually until the very beginning of the raid. We didn't know when the raid was coming. We didn't really know if the raid was coming because the so-called 5 o'clock deadline of yesterday, which is a deadline set up by the police, actually set up by Danette Shoemaker, who said, as the head of Parks and Rec, that there was an imminent threat to life at the San Lorenzo Park campground, so they couldn't wait for the court's decision on January 4th, where it was supposed to happen in federal court. She had to move on it immediately. That deadline was passed without any police action, so a number of us stayed the night there. We have a caller, though. Let's check on that. Hi there, caller. You're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hi, Robert. It's Kathleen Perlin. How are you?
Good, Kathleen. Are you listening to the show?
I'm not listening to the show. I was listening to John Lennon because it's 30 years ago today that he was killed.
Well, right now I'm concerned with, of course, the more recent attacks on poor and homeless people.
Well, you know what? I went on Facebook today and I wrote to the president, and I already wrote to Andy Rooney several weeks ago about occupation.
Good.
So you can go there and you can see what I wrote. It's under Kathleen Lean Perlin.
Okay, were you here around?
I blasted it. I'm really pissed off. I've got friends down here that are losing their marijuana, they're going to court. They got to go. It's ridiculous. They get their cars towed. It's stupid. This is all fucking stupid. It's driving me crazy.
I hear you, babe. Were you? Have you been out there the last few days?
I have. I've been out there since October 21st.
Huh.
I see police brutality. I see police selling drugs. I see it. I've seen it. I thought that they were people in costumes dressed as police officers. There are city police selling heroin and stealing marijuana and stealing people's laptops and stealing their tents and stealing their IDs and not giving it back.
Kathleen, how do you know these are police officers and not just ordinary thieves? And how much of this have you actually seen more? How much have you heard about?
I've seen it. I've seen it happen.
And when's the last time you saw that happen?
Probably 4 days ago.
And what did you see?
I saw an officer hand off a package to a young girl, okay? But about 20 minutes later, I saw him take the backpack from some other people, search it. It had marijuana in it, and he took the whole backpack.
Now, where did you see this happen?
I saw it down at the camp.
And which police officer was this?
You know, I don't know. I didn't go close enough. I just spent 70 days in jail. My husband is a criminal, putting me in jail like that.
Normally I'd be skeptical about this, Kathleen, but actually, hang on a second. Yesterday I was you know, we were waiting for the police to come at 5 o'clock for the deadline there when they were supposedly going to drive everybody out. They ended up driving people out this morning instead. But there, somebody called me over to look at an incident that was happening right kind of on the edge of the county building across from the lawn bowling area, if you know where that is.
I do know where that is.
And there were three folks, one African-American guy, Melvin Jones, his name was. I recognized him from actually earlier discussions I had about a case he had here about a year and a half ago. He was the first person to be charged under the three infractions and year misdemeanor law passed by the city council to essentially ramp up the sleeping ban and other infraction crimes. But he was there. He was being held by a total of five sheriff's deputies who were all undercover, but they had on these sheriff's vests on.
That's
black
exactly
vests.
Exactly what these guys have on.
And these
exactly
were,
it.
And they were clearly, I mean, I got close enough to, you know, record some of what went down. I'm not going to be playing it today because I'm not going to have time.
Well,
but I may do that on Sunday.
I've been seeing this happen since the day I got here, October
21st. Right. Well, what I wanted to say, though, Kathleen, was that I actually observed one of these deputies go through this guy's, Melvin's wallet. It was either Melvin or the individual next to him, and take some money out and put it in his pocket.
Exactly.
Which I found remarkable because I was watching this whole thing. Now, you know, maybe it was done as evidence, or maybe it was done.
Somebody stole my laptop, my cell phone, and I had $2,000.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not. You know,
somebody stole that stuff.
Yeah, I'm not, Kathleen. I'm not quick to call. You know, to call corruption on sheriffs. I'm quick to talk about misconduct. I'm quick to talk about brutality, because it's quite visible. And corruption is a little harder to trace.
Mr. Norris, let me tell you about the sheriff's department.
Well, I think we can't really talk about that at length now, but right. I'm going to encourage you to call me back on Sunday.
Oh, I will call you back.
When I'll have
and
more time. I'm trying to kind of get through the events of the Occupy Santa Cruz, the attack on Occupy Santa Cruz is happening. And by the way, I encourage everybody to go down to the General Assembly that's happening even now at the county building, and every night at 6 a.m. Bring warm clothing, but go down there and see what you can do to get to work together with other people find ways to stand up to this.
I am very committed. When you go on Facebook and see what I wrote today, the president of Mexico's wife is in that jail.
Well,
I
listen,
know it.
Thank you very much, then. And get back to me on Sunday if
you'd
like, Kathleen.
I worked with Cesar Chavez on the labor union. I know her.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, babe.
Bye.
And phone lines are open, 427-3772. I don't know the credibility of everything Kathleen is saying, and I'm trying not to dismiss it out of hand. It's a little off topic for me, although, you know, as I said, some things resonate in strange ways because of, you know, recent experiences I've had recently as 24 hours ago. I'm just, you know, becoming increasingly appalled at the openness with which police state activities and police corruption is becoming manifest here. If I get to it, I can actually play you a dialogue of a sort that I had with Police Chief Vogel today at the Parks and Rec Department. We had a small march to the Parks and Rec around noon, actually around 1. We were slow to get going. Apparently there was an earlier group that was there, and a larger number of riot squad police were there. When we got there, there were only, I think, 7 or 8 riot squad folks. Deputy Chief, I don't know, was it Escalante? I don't want to, you know, get the guy's name wrong. But it certainly was Police Chief Vogel. There he was. And we had a rather, should we say, prickly exchange there, trying to get back the property of people whose tents and so forth were stolen and or vandalized and or destroyed by the sheriff's, reportedly, by the sheriff's advance, by the police advance on the San Lorenzo Park this morning. But let me continue to just sort of work through the tapes that I recorded earlier, actually beginning with about midnight tonight. Midnight, early this morning, I should say, I went to, I was at the General Assembly yesterday. There was a lot of concern about the park being left a mess. There was a concern, of course, about the 5 o'clock deadline. We had a 2:30 assembly yesterday, which wasn't a general assembly. It was a camp meeting and trying to discuss what to do. A number of people from the camp talked about resistance, about at least holding their ground. And a number of campers actually did stay throughout the night in spite of the threat of this and the reality of the oppression and the destruction and seizure of property and the physical abuse, reportedly, that happened when dozens of police went through the campground with batons drawn. You're going to hear some accounts of that, both positive and negative. There are some people who claim it was done in an appropriate way. Not many. I think only one person I spoke to had that perspective. But I'm going to play all these accounts, and I'm going to start now with the... I was parked in my vehicle, shivering away, but, you know, then turning on my car, getting nice and warm there, and catching winks of sleep, and then going down. I was parked in front of the Occupy Santa Cruz area on Water Street. And I went down to the table was still being held, even though in the no trespass zone, where the Occudome used to be, the octagonal, I think it was octagonal, but it's the dome-like structure that was destroyed and dismantled by sheriffs, I guess it's, 5 days ago now, something like that, on Sunday morning, I believe it was. And instead, folks had set up a table, and there was a guy there who had actually cooked up a tent that he was wearing. We're going to begin with that.
Well, here we are in front of the new mini Occudome here, a tent placed in front of the courthouse, and it's looks like we have about... 10, 12 people here in Noah's manning the new information table, a modest shadow of the old table. And we're talking with
Sonia.
And Sonia, you're using your new shiver and shake approach to avoid being cold.
Yes, it is freezing in Santa Cruz. And this is working. It's working out for me quite well.
But
just going to do the jig all
shaking
night.
Shaking and pacing and jiggling, yeah. You do in the old keeping warm.
It's happening.
It kind of works. I kind of noticed that.
Maybe it'll keep me up too, and I won't be tempted to pass out standing up.
And die of hypothermia.
Hey,
what's happening? We have a parcel is about to be delivered here.
To demonstrate the beautiful new tool.
This is the the OccuWalk, that sort of thing.
The OccuMonster.
There he is.
Bam!
He is the walking tent. Oh no! It's the Santa Cruz's worst fear. It's the walking tent. Or Mr. Coleman.
Tent Monster. You know what I mean?
What's your name, Tent Monster?
Rush.
And Rush, where did you pick up this? Well, you picked it up right here, this Coleman tent.
This is the tent I got off that guy down below that I got from you earlier. So, you were about to buy it. I think.
Slipped in front of me. Bought the tent.
I was just looking for money when you slipped in.
So you purchased this tent.
It's $3.
And the latest in fashion wear, I see.
Yes, and it's going to be awesome. I'm going to take it to every Occupy I go to and be the tent monster.
The tent monster, the worst fear of the city, of the county authorities.
Yep, and they already messed with me on the property saying that when my tent's down, that it has to, they had to call the cops, or the first alarm wanted to call the cops. Because it was on the ground. And I asked him, what if I'm wearing it as a costume? What are you going to do? I still had to call the cops, he said. So,
did he, in fact, call the cops?
Yeah, supposedly.
And they're still waiting for your ticket.
Correct.
Well, we've been talking with
Crush,
the living tent.
And as far as I know, the tent monster did not get a ticket. Or at least I haven't so been informed.
So the orange mesh fence affixed to red and white stakes surrounds the formerly grassy area, which had housed various occudomes, or I should say various tents, perhaps part of Occupy Santa Cruz. And it's, I do see that there is nobody sleeping on the county property in tents around near the jury assembly room. It's well lit with lights on high poles. though nothing new has been added here. And the numerous signs around the old San Lorenzo Benchlands area. Doing a quick walk through here, see how things are going. Some of the signs are too big, too fail, too rich for jail. And there's a series of peace flags that are around the campground and organized. And one other sign, existing is not a crime. And people, not grass. Seems to be more life than I thought there would be at midnight. And folks are either digging through the trash, bags of trash been placed by the side of the road, or maybe they're just simply loading up their stuff. Can't tell for sure. The sign says, okay, I will just go back to the gutter. It's leaning against a tree. So the number of tents that are left are certainly not quite a drop, but there are still tents. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on the Occupy Santa Cruz side of the teepee. And then there's another encampment further down of another 4 or 5 tents. Hello. And then, of course, there are folks inside the large teepee, I imagine. But the other side of the teepee, as you head toward the footbridge, I'm counting 20, 25 tents. So there's 30 tents left, at least 35 tents on the property. Well, some of these tents may not be occupied, so to speak. But it looks like almost all of them are closed in, and so one's fair to kind of imagine that they are. And it is now about 20 to 6, and it's not sure when it gets light, but I'm here at the table, or in front of the table actually, protected by my warm car, thank God. Boy, does your voice get shaky when you're out there in the cold. And there are folks sleeping on sleeping bags, 2 or 3 of them around. There's our tent man who wears a tent as part of his everyday best fashion. There may be deputies changing shift across the street. We earlier had a few moments ago, had kind of an alarm that the police had showed up at the campground. And there were two squad cars, or a squad car and a squad station wagon, driving through along the path, the San Lorenzo path. But they were apparently not the immediate precursor to a raid.
And it really, those of us who were kind of shivering outside, and again, I had the luxury of a car I could get into, but boy, was it cold last night, and it will be cold again tonight. There didn't seem to be any clear sign of the police. There were sheriffs across the street in the prison area, or the jail parking lot, and there was an occasional sort of look-see by some SCPD car or two driving through to do a check, but there was no clear indication of people massing, and so I eventually took off to get back to, somewhat exhausted myself, to get back to Crash. And there was partially perhaps in preparation for the walk to the Parks and Rec, the march to confront Danette Shoemaker, the head of Parks and Rec, with asking for an explanation of how she found there was an imminent threat to life in the campground. And no sooner had I left than they struck. So there you go. No doubt I will be accused of fleeing the scene, but I wasn't. I wasn't playing the scene. I was just exhausted. Anyway, let's hear some more. Now we're soon these interviews will shift ahead in time because I wasn't actually at the campground, but I was able to interview people who were when the attack by the police happened.
And there
Paris. A news media van showed up. Two of them, actually, Phil Gomez and Channel 48. Then there was another, I think a second van showed up. There's people wondering, you know, I guess, I don't know, they want to show the debris that ensues when police create a panic about arrests for people, some of whom are on probation or parole, some of whom are just homeless and don't want to go through all this stuff again. From San Lorenzo Park, there is a band of stalwarts from Occupy Santa Cruz who have braved this cold. I'm really impressed. I was in a warm vehicle through most of the night. You know, I went outside to do a little looking around. It's really cold out there. I'd say 30s or 40s. Luckily, no wind. That would really have been horrible. And Occupy Santa Cruz and the San Lorenzo campground continues. The last word is that sometime in the early hours of the morning, a couple of first alarm security guards, according to a secondhand report, told people sleeping on the county side of the park that they had to leave, and so they all picked up and went back to the San Lorenzo campground area. And so there's probably about 35 tents down there and 70 or 80 people. That's the update as of 15 to 6.
And I just got a call from a caller wondering what did I expect to happen, actually. And the answer was I expected the police to come in riot gear and clear the campground. That's what I expected, and actually what I expected happened. I expected it to happen at a point before the Occupy Santa Cruz activists who had planned to come back in an hour and do a complete cleanup job in the campground could actually do it. And also, in a way that essentially completely cleared the campground and with as little violence as possible, because violence on camera does not play well either with the local liberal pretenders or with the national watching audience. So I expected this to happen. I wasn't sure when it was going to happen. It seemed possible that they would delay it even further to give the Sentinel an opportunity to take all kinds of delicious photos about how much of a mess was created by the panic created by the police warnings and so forth. But I was pretty sure that was going to happen. And as I told people actually a week or two ago, I didn't think the authorities were going to wait for this injunction to wind its way through the court to January 4th. They were going to find some way to move on the camp and on the Occupy Santa Cruz, which they've done. Both the first they moved on the tents in front of the courthouse, then they moved on the Occudome, then they moved on people who were just trying to sit there at night with signs, and now they've moved on the campground. It's been a progressive attack on freedom of assembly at the courthouse. Quite chilling, not just because of the weather, but in terms of the significance of what is happening. And it's being done, you know, the salami approach, bite by bite. It's quite grim.
Well, I'm
by the salami approach, I mean, if you want to slice off salami, you just do it a little at a time. It's sort of like boiling a lobster in hot water. You don't suddenly turn up the heat. You just do it little by little.
Right here at the kind of Occupy Santa Cruz Table 2, which is next to the bus stop. Are you two planning to take the bus anytime soon?
Now, what's happening here is this is still actually before the raid. Most of the night, people from Occupy Santa Cruz who had stayed behind, and the reason I stayed behind was I was sort of dressed in my bathrobe with my teddy bear and Eduardo the police bear, as I call him, and sort of the traditional thing I wear at sleeping band protests. This is the largest encampment of homeless people in at least a decade and a half, including Camp Paradise and including the Homies for the Homeless protest at City Hall in 2007 or 2008. It might even have been larger than the River Street, than the Coral Street Open Air Shelter of 1995. And it certainly was the largest homeless run encampment. This is a homeless run encampment where folks created their own community, resolved their own problems, and created a space of freedom and privacy for people in the campground. Certainly not an ideal space, but certainly better than the isolated, miserable situations individuals were in, where they had to both beware of predators and beware of the predatory police department, which is given the predatory mission of running off poor and homeless people who dare to engage in survival camping in Santa Cruz. So, this was... I felt it's not that we could defend this campground in any meaningful way, but we wanted to be present to do, to help those who were at the campground do what they wanted to do, whether it was to stay, to go, to sit down and refuse to leave. We would sit down with them. That was the idea, to be in solidarity with the people at the campground. I've done this before years ago, and that was the idea this time. I didn't relish the idea. The weather was freezing. The cause, in some at least immediate sense, was hopeless. You can't stand against 90 to 120 armed police in riot gear. It's not going to happen. But there is something else going on at the same time. There is a sense of you're respecting the dignity and the choices and the needs of hundreds of people who are being displaced in an arbitrary, almost a mechanical fashion by an indifferent set of politicians and bureaucrats. And it's really, I don't know, it's an attempt to inject some kind of humanity into to acknowledge the courage of some people. And there are a lot of people who are a hell of a lot more courageous than I am. And I left before the final confrontation. Though had I known the confrontation was going to happen in 20 minutes, I would have stayed. But I didn't know when it was going to happen, and I was pooped, so I took off. And nonetheless, let's hear more of what went down. This, as I said before, this table that you're going to hear about, this discussion with several activists, the main table was in front of the Occupy Santa Cruz, the county building, where the tables have been for the last 2.5 months. Recently, of course, that's all been declared illegal. It's illegal to be there at night now, not because there's been any particular damage or property destruction or molesting of people or blocking of anything. Just arbitrary decision by Susan Mariello, the chief county administrative officer. Admittedly, after this was done and people were harassed and their property was stolen, a window got broken out in the county building. You know, big fucking deal. Sorry, it doesn't really surprise me. It doesn't alarm me. It's too bad because, of course, it gives the police and the authorities more grist for their mill and makes the judges more possessive of their little power structure. Who knows? Maybe it might have played a role in Judge Volkman's decision yesterday not to grant a temporary restraining order sought by Ed Fry, which would have said, in essence, it's not appropriate for Danette Shoemaker, the head of the Parks and Rec, to declare an open season on the homeless at 5 o'clock yesterday and move in the riot police until they've had their day in court. But apparently Judge Volkman didn't think that was something he wanted to do. He denied that temporary restraining order. It should be said that there is a normal process, even for the bizarre kind of backdoor process that was used by Danette Shoemaker to try to get past the forthcoming hearing in federal court, which now sounds like it's moot, unless the campground somehow reestablishes itself. You never can tell, of course. But it's now all fenced off with orange mesh fencing, and it's being turned into a swamp by all the sprinklers and so forth. And it's being guarded by first alarm security guards, so it's not likely to be reoccupied anytime soon. The city wants to spend a lot of money showing its power. That's what we're beginning to see here. That has nothing to do with any rational purpose, but it all has to do with making people afraid and subservient to authority as it exists. I mean, they didn't claim there was a plague. All this false rumors of scabies and ringworm and other problems were never justified. Never, there was no evidence ever shown for that. You know, the problems with sanitation were addressed by daily cleanups of the porta potties. And, you know, instead, now you just have this ongoing attack. We're going to take this call and then we'll get back to the tapes. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hey, Robert, DG Matter Embryo.
Hey there, Mr. LA Man.
Hey, Bo, I just wanted to say, I mean, you know, you could probably tell how I would sound this, but, just the neglect of the homeless just in general, that the authorities that occupy that building, that county building, are responsible for. Matt, you had some magical powers to be able to blow out all the windows in the county building at the same time, it would not really be much of a problem. It would definitely not be a crime in comparison to the neglect of one homeless person that has been done. You know, and like, and here we have the same thing. There's homeless people sitting out in front of places that you, like, I went and gave, like, some garments of clothes to this guy today, which I totally have extras. It's not any...
You're beginning to break up there, DJ Embryo.
I'll let you go. I'm sorry that we have a bad connection. Yeah. I'm just trying to say, like, these the crimes that these people do who are leaving us are so much more important than the breaking of any amount of windows, any amount of windows.
Yeah, I hear you, man. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I think trying to weigh broken windows against broken lives is, it's the kind of thing that people of property who are concerned about their windows love to do and make their laws around, but it's, of course, has nothing to do with the deeper values, even ironically the deeper values that they profess through their churches and their ethics courses and their whole legal structure claim to be concerned about. It's just... it's a form of hypocrisy and blindness, and unfortunately it's an ongoing juggernaut. And the court is really the center of where a lot of this happens, under the auspices of these same black-robed judges. Now, I was going to kind of pause briefly to look at the actual decision of the judges, of the Judge Volkman, on this whole... occupy this attempt to get an injunction. Let's see if I can find it here. I'm taking a quick look here, and I don't know if I can find it here, but let's try one more time. Let's see here. Occupy Santa Cruz. That should be how to do it. By the way, if you want to call in, you can. 427-3772. Occupy Santa Cruz. Let's see. This may be it. I think we actually have... here we go. Occupy Santa Cruz, the actual website, has this this article, Grass 1, Freedom 0. Occupy Santa Cruz, represented by Ed Fry, was denied a restraining order against city police dismantling camp as early as 5 p.m. today, yesterday, actually. Santa Cruz Superior Court Judge Timothy Volkman stated the decision was on these four grounds, all disputed. One, Occupy Santa Cruz's case, Volkman held, was not likely to succeed in litigation as a temporary restraining order. Occupy Santa Cruz would not be irreparably harmed by the camp's removal. Just a few lives lost here and there. The balance of equity was not tipped, whatever that means, and the restraining order was not shown to be in the public interest, which means, of course, the public interest apparently is best served by making an entire community of 100 to 200 people homeless and denying them the community, the communal space that they had themselves created, and turned them loose instead and dispersed them all over the city. I think the public interest is not served there at all. Even if you don't like homeless people, I think that's a really stupid thing to do, both in terms of policing and in terms of safety for the precious property of shop owners and folks of that class. It seems pretty obvious to me, but hey, I'm just a radio commentator. So, again, I'll try to return back to the tape. A table was set up, a second table was set up, not just in front of the courthouse, but as sort of a midway spot between the camp and the courthouse. You have to understand there had been, of course, direct access between the camp and the courthouse via the grass. But all that had now been meshed off by sheriffs, who apparently now feel that they're going to give a new meaning to the phrase, don't walk on the grass. They want to see this is all to protect the grass. Actually, they didn't really state what it was to protect, but they made it clear that it would be a form of trespass and or vandalism. That was the implication if anybody used the route that people have traditionally used when walking around the courthouse on the grass. So people had to use the sidewalk, and then you would do a right-angle turn at the bus stop area. Well, the table was set up at the bus stop, and I went over to chat with two people at the table, and this is, again, right before the crackdown this morning in Santa Cruz.
Certainly not. We're here to promote free speech and democracy.
Mm. And what about you, sir? Ditto. There you go. He's a ditto head. And what's your name, Mr. Democracy Man?
George.
So, George, you say you were doing this vigil a night ago?
I've been out here at 6 in the morning since every day since Monday. So I was here for the arrest of our protesters on Monday. I was here on Tuesday.
Yesterday was Wednesday.
And yesterday I was out here on Wednesday, and today I'm here.
Have you been sleeping out, or do you live nearby in a comfortable home?
I live nearby in a comfortable home.
Well, actually, that's the best thing to do. I think we should all do that.
I wish we could all do that.
So, what have you seen on the mornings when you've been out here that you think we should know about?
Well, generally, 15 minutes before the curfew is raised, the illegal curfew is raised on the plaza, the cops usually show up to harass and complain. One of their complaints is that our table is on the sidewalk. Well, they told us we couldn't have the table on the plaza, so that's why it was on the sidewalk.
I see the D&G sanitation truck has showed up to deal with the overloaded shitter, as we say.
Well, and before we get into the details of the overloaded shitter or the honeypot doing the poo-poo removal, which actually is, it was initially an issue we were concerned about because it was a couple weeks before a porta-potty was actually put in, and then a couple more weeks before three porta-potties were, the new total of three porta-potties was done, all financed by Occupy Santa Cruz supporters. Although I'm told that at the last night's General Assembly, the move was to remove all the porta-potties by those who want to, don't have the money to pay for it, and also may be concerned with trying to push Occupy in an indoors direction. That's going to be talked about, and probably is being talked about, at the General Assembly tonight, if you want to go down to the courthouse and check that out. It's going to become illegal at 7 o'clock, and it'll be freezing even before 7 o'clock, but it's probably worth checking out, 7 o'clock at the courthouse down on Water Street, right across from the jail. You'll be able to find it there. And there's even a table or two. Probably the literature table is still there, along with 50 to 100 people still meeting in this constricted space. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3. I've got it now. Previously 101.1. And we also stream at freakradio.org. If you want to reach me off air, the number is 423-4833, the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line. If you want to catch me in the studio, you can. You can talk on the air at 427-3772. 831-427-3772. So, this issue of the information table, which for the last 2.5 months has been sitting on the entrance way to the courthouse, where there's really, it's not really an entrance. It used to be an entrance 30 years ago. It's been closed for decades, but it's served as an assembly spot for people to debate, to talk every night, to have a general assembly for the last 2.5 months. And now the sheriffs have said, you can't have it there. You're trespassing. So they moved it out to the sidewalk, and the sheriffs are saying, oh, you can't. You're blocking the sidewalk. Does this sound a little like Mississippi in the 60s? Yeah, it kind of does. At least to me it does. It's, however, what authorities tend to do when they want to stop popular movements that threaten power. So we have to devise ways to combat that kind of authoritarianism and repression.
That's the regular maintenance of the shitter.
The portable sanitation facility.
The honey bucket is here. The honey bucket always comes at this hour, by the way, from a man who has been here at this hour.
They're not designed to sabotage our interview.
This is a normal run of the honey bucket to provide clean, portable toilets for the rest of the day.
So this is a daily thing?
Yes. And we're paying, Occupy Santa Cruz is paying $300 a month for this to provide this service to the campers.
Well, is that true for the other two porta potties that were down?
They are part of, yes, all three porta potties are serviced by this honey bucket.
And I noticed last night at the General Assembly there was this Tom unilaterally moved to eliminate all the porta potties without any discussion. I mean, he allowed for discussion, but people were so quiet or demoralized that there was no objection to the plan to cancel all the porta potties as of today. Did you remember? Did you catch that?
Yeah.
Nobody objected to that, so there's going to be no facilities to cover people tomorrow.
Yeah, and that was brought up at the end of the General Assembly when everyone was exhausted and wanted to go home. We may bring that up earlier in the next General Assembly.
Actually, he brought it up, I think, as a working group.
Yeah.
But at the beginning.
The working group can report at the next General Assembly and we can make it an agenda item.
Well, indeed.
This is normal. This is totally normal to have them come and clean out the porta potty at this hour. I haven't seen it multiple times.
Fair enough. And we've been talking with
George.
Thank you, George. So these signs along here, one leaning against each tree, and the trees that sort of surround the campground. I've read some of them before, but one of them says, "The striving for profit is ruining this world. Existing is not a crime. Shelter, warmth, food, community, chilly time for free speech. People, not grass, rise up. Human needs, not corporate greed. My ancestors slept outside. Why can't I? No sleep for the weary."
And these are all signs around the kind of perimeter of the campground that was destroyed by the police this morning.
That's now about 12:20 on December 8th.
And now we move ahead about 6 hours to around the noon era when I raced into town somewhat exhausted because I still hadn't gotten much sleep. Checked out the Parks and Rec offices, and there were, I guess the chief of police was hanging out there, or some police official. Chief of police later showed up there. And then went over to Occupy Santa Cruz, the front of the courthouse, and then met with some folks and began to interview them. We waited quite a while. We didn't leave at noon. We left at 1 o'clock for our march to the Parks and Rec. But before we did into that, your calls. Hello, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing good.
All right, then.
You made a comment I wanted to comment on.
Of course. Go ahead, caller.
Popular movements that threaten power.
Uh-huh.
That's what you said.
I did.
I don't see any threat to power. I see power coming out in force to crush whatever you want to call it happen.
Well, you know, perhaps I should have put it a little differently. Popular movements that those in power think threaten them.
How did it threaten anybody? By taking over that bank building?
Well, you know, I'm not saying that there's any real threat. But when people in groups get together and essentially begin to disregard or challenge the authority of those in power, even if they don't have any real power at the moment in terms of weaponry or huge numbers or a lot of money, it's still, if they are willing through their conscience's actions to take actions that, you know, stand up in violation of the rules set down by those in power, I think the people in power begin to feel threatened. They're afraid others are going to do something similar. However, you know, unlikely that may really be in reality.
Well, you know, they might have got to point one. If you look at, to me, the bank, let's just say the bank building takeover.
The old bank that was taken over on River Street.
But the absolute unaccountability is reprehensible, and it created its own self-destruction. It was pure delusional escapism garbage, and it needs to be said, Robert. I mean, it's unfortunate. In my opinion, you do something like that, it's civil disobedience, you take the heat for it.
You don't
deny your accountability.
You're being critical of those who took over the 75 River Street.
I'm being super critical of what they did.
Okay, go ahead. And there are those who are.
And, of course, what they did by being so unaccountable, not just the fact that they did what they did, because it had its theatrical moment, okay? But to be so unaccountable, to deny accountability, is to go counter to anyone's sense of responsibility. And so what you're left with is idiocy, really, that comes to his defense.
Well, let me comment
on
that.
And no one of any credibility can
I got to tell you, Bob, I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about
it. I know you don't.
Because really, I regard the vision of 100 riot police attacking homeless people as far more important than people who are occupying a vacant 3.5-year vacant bank. Sorry.
They did more than occupy it,
yeah,
Robert.
Oh,
they trashed
okay.
it.
No, they didn't trash it. There was some vandalism, graffiti damage done.
Who took accountability
when
for
I
that?
Was there, I didn't see much
Nobody
significant damage.
For
I disagree with you,
and
Bob.
The fact that you won't stand up and say
no,
that,
no, I'm
Robert,
saying
is where you and I part company.
Well,
and
that's
and
okay.
I respect and honor you in many ways.
That's all right. You know,
I don't mind.
But
when you stand there and defend this
Bob,
crap,
I don't
which
mind
is exactly
if you,
what it is.
Bob, I don't mind if you and I differ on this issue. But again, I think to some extent it has to do with facts. Did you walk in the bank and look at any damage that you claim was there?
Was any damage denied?
Did you walk
Robert?
In the bank and look
it
at any damage?
Denied. The only
did you
thing was denied
hold it?
Was accountability.
No, no, no. I went in the bank and I saw what was going on in there. Did you?
No, I did not.
Okay, well, so, you know, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, unless you think I'm lying to you about it.
The comments that I heard is that we had a party and we didn't do it. They did it.
Yeah, well, you know, you can't believe all the comments you hear.
Right.
No, but,
so
but
nobody
again,
took accountability.
Right, well, you made your point. And I think that, you know, it's a point that a lot of people, I don't know about the accountability so much.
There's nothing to stand up for
it's not,
except criminality.
You know, I think again, you tend to focus on one thing. You know, I think we should talk about how the police are behaving, not how a bunch of people who took over a bank for 3.5 days and then peacefully left it. I'm
left
sorry,
in,
Bob, that's what they did.
What?
And in fact, you know,
what,
it would have been actually much more effective if they had tried to hold the bank.
Did they leave it clean?
Let me finish and let themselves get the shit beaten out of them. That would have resounded throughout the country.
The kind of
niggling that you're talking about would have been lost in the violence of the police reaction.
They didn't do that.
But hold it, Bob. They didn't do that.
It was not a rainbow gathering. Gandhi. It was garbage.
Bob, they didn't do that. They just left the bank after 3.5 days. So I'm turning you down for a moment here. You know, what I'm saying is that I think, you know, I don't want to see people hurt. But if you're the kind of the person who believes in understanding and looking at what happened at UC Davis and looking at what happened up in, you know, Seattle and seeing how violence against people by the police actually has a positive effect in stirring support for these protests, that would have been a much more effective approach.
Oh, really?
You
Robert,
know?
You're changing the subject.
Not
very
really.
Conveniently.
Not really. I mean, I think it's. I'm saying is it shows a lot of responsibility by the people in that bank. But you know, as I said before, I'm going to leave
Robert,
this. I'm going to give you the last word.
I'm
going to give you the last word, and I'm going to leave the subject because I really got a lot of stuff
bank,
to cover.
They trashed it, and they took no accountability for it. There's nothing to defend.
You're repeating yourself,
action.
Bob. You're repeating yourself, okay? Anything else?
Well, you know, given the circumstances, Robert, thank you for letting me get on the air.
Oh, no. You know, you'll always be let on the air, Bob. You know that. You take care.
See ya.
Yeah, have a good night. So, you know, this is the excuse that's being used for all kinds of things that happened in the last 3 days. Sorry, doesn't wash any with me. And people who amplify that, I think, are really blind to what they're doing. They are pumping up this police bullshit, and I think it's a real mistake. But I understand a lot of people feel that way. Bob isn't the only one. There are others who have spoken to me about this. People who are connected with Occupy Santa Cruz, even homeless people in the camp, were concerned that this would give the police the pretext to move on the camp and to move on the building. Although the police claimed that they had this whole plan long before, and the sheriffs have said the same thing. I haven't, unfortunately, got the documents that would show either way what the real situation is. I don't know. All I know is that we as a society need to look at, I think we need to be more concerned about what police officers are doing with our money than an autonomous group who took off from Occupy Santa Cruz. But particularly since, you know, As I said before, my perception of the damage done was it was extremely limited. It is, however, being used as the red flag to run around, rant, and rave about this stuff. We have a caller. Hey there, caller. You're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, I know you want to move on. All I want to say is that that's just so hilarious, that reasoning that the people use. The police, they don't need any pretext to do what they want to do. We live in a police state. It's like, hello, when are these liberals going to fucking understand that? They don't need some pretext to move on you. So just, you know, taking any property that is ill-gotten and shouldn't be held by government is totally justified. What do you mean unaccountable? That whole unaccountability thing that Bob was talking about is just completely ludicrous. The government's the only one that needs to show accountability here. They're the only ones who are being unaccountable. What do you mean? Some fucking burn that fucking thing down, dude. What are you talking about? Like graffiti, as if it's some problem. That area needs to be liberated. Fucking the building needs to be just completely destroyed. Something new and positive built there for the people. Anything else is BS, dude. I really thought, I don't mean to be harsh, but I thought that the views of Bob LaMonica were the crap there. The crime is what's being done by the government. The crime is having some rich fuckhead own that area, which totally illegitimate. It just comes from colonialism. It's BS, and that was totally legitimate what they did. That's my opinion.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Well, you know, I think too much is made of the whole River Street thing. I think it was one action, and I'm happy to talk about it. Maybe on Sunday we can talk about it more when there's more time, but I don't have a lot of time here, so I'll move on after saying that, you know, they were a block away from the downtown. If they had wanted to make a real strong stand and encourage a lot of people to stand with them, there would have been a real trashing of the downtown. There would have been real breaking of windows. There would have been real looting. I'm afraid that's what would have happened. And I think that the people who were inside that building were very responsible. I mean, they were concerned about their own safety, and they were concerned about possible prosecution, perhaps too concerned about it, because that's now being used by Chief Vogel and various other police state advocates as a kind of a club against Occupy Santa Cruz. But I think it was a lot of responsibility shown. And I think, you know, I don't entirely agree that the decision to take over the bank was necessarily the best thing to do. But on the other hand, I don't think it was, you know, I think there's a lot of arguments on both sides on that issue. It certainly seems to me that trying to do something in that regard to deal with properties that are being unused is a key issue. And not just to talk about it, but to do something about it is important. And then to do something about it fundamentally, nonviolently. And I'm sorry, property destruction, even the kind of limited vandalism that, you know, may have been the case in this bank, because I didn't see the ultimate outcome. I understand that that any problems were created, they tried to deal with, and before they left the bank. I don't know how successfully they did. The police claim they weren't, and I'm not saying the police are lying. But you have to weigh these things in a scale. You really do. And you have to weigh what the significance is of having a huge police force engaging in the incredible amount of excessive force they've been engaged in, the police and the sheriffs, for the last couple weeks and across the country. I mean, these are the issues we need to be confronting, it seems to me. So, again, now we're going to turn to discussions that happened earlier today before a march to... It's actually a march is a little intense a word, I would say, a walk down to the Parks and Rec Department, because it was Danette Shoemaker, the head of Parks and Rec, that created this so-called evacuation order to circumvent the fact that the courts had found that there were real First Amendment issues concerned if they wanted to declare a public nuisance in the San Lorenzo Park, and that needed to be taken to federal court. And in order to short-circuit that, an imminent life-threatening situation was declared without any specifics by Danette Shoemaker, who then left town, at least this morning she left town, and she was up at the Coastal Commission doing some sort of testimony or hearing up there. Anyway, here's some more of that tape.
PM, the D&G sanitation porta potty facility, has now been handcuffed with plastic handcuffs shut. And I see a small group of people gathering.
And again, let me clarify what's happened. The porta potty, which had served people and the public health that was parked along the side right next to the bus stop. You might have seen it as you went over the bridge. One of the plastic handcuffs used by police to handcuff people when they've run out of all their metal handcuffs was used to handcuff shut the door of the porta potty so that people could not use it as a restroom. That is to say, the private property of people who had paid for it was vandalized by the police department. The same police department that was using excuses like feces and urine as a grounds of declaring the park a public nuisance. There's some strange contradictions here, folks. They aren't really strange at all, of course. They show that people in power don't feel that the rest of the community will believe or forced to be intimidated enough to feel they have to believe anything the police say, however contradictory. It's bizarre. But it's, in a way, quite familiar.
Here at the park, which has now been cleared of all human beings and their tents, survival equipment, so forth. Looks like we have about 10 people here with Becky Johnson talking to the group. So I'm here at a small band of protesters that are awaiting a larger group of people. And it's, looks like, well, why are you here at this protest? Got her now. Mom's the word, and she speaks.
I want to say it right. I don't want to.
Oh no, just say whatever you know is on your mind. This is not.
Because I'm still just a concerned person, wanting to see what's going on. Where are we? Where is the protest going to continue to be seen?
And we're looking over the remains. Actually, not the remains of the campground. This is a. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We'll skip from the previous speaker to. Tell me what happened, what you saw with respect to one of the protesters, or I say campers, honey. Or did you see anything?
Yeah, I was there. I saw it. It was, I mean, both sad and very powerful. The demonstrators came up and asked her if she needed help getting her stuff out, and she said that she wasn't leaving and that this was her home. And this was as the line of riot cops was approaching. And eventually they just sort of pushed the demonstrators back and cut the tent down around her and twisted her arms back and lifted her out. This was right around the time that they hit Gabby with one of their batons and knocked her to the ground.
Was Gabrielle resisting in any way? Perhaps
no,
wielding a pencil?
She wasn't backing up fast enough. She was backing up and
was she yelling?
No. She was walking back. Her hands were in her pockets, and a police officer gave her a warning that she has to back up or she'll get hit, and didn't even get those words out before he hit her with her baton and knocked her to the ground.
And Gabrielle was one of the activists seized by the police and jailed, originally on $100 bail, and then now there's some kind of claim that the bail was vastly increased against her. I don't know if she's been released or not. If anybody has any news about that who's listening in, please let me know. And I'm hoping to get a report from Steve Plaich at the General Assembly, which just began about 15 minutes ago at the courthouse, I believe. So for folks who want to go down there, it's still going on, and people can actually, you know, get in on what's cooking, be a part of the whole process, express their concerns, and help out as the broader community attempts to address the kinds of police abuses and bureaucratic and political abuses and attacks on the homeless and attacks on political speech that are happening here at the Occupy Santa Cruz, what was the Occupy Santa Cruz site down there in front of the courthouse. I don't know what's going on with Gabrielle. There were about six or seven people who were arrested. Honey was arrested. Gabriella was arrested. Joel was arrested. There's another couple who was arrested. You're going to hear some of this. At least this is what I'm told. Again, my second-hand information, which will have to be clarified later as to how accurate it is. But here's some more of this report from an individual who prefers to identify himself by a pseudonym, Bill.
And a couple people lifted her up and
it was side on.
Yeah, it was a,
and
it was
a couple people lifted her up who were not police.
Yeah, a few demonstrators helped her get to her feet and
helped Gabriella get to her feet.
Later, I understand police then came out of the crowd to arrest her, according to another report I received.
Yeah, this was up on the walkway behind the courthouse. This first incident
happened here in front of the jury assembly room, generally, right?
This first incident happened actually in the camp over on that little like raised berm there, where Honey's tent was.
Originally, Honey was over here.
Yeah, no, her tent was down there at this point, and
you're pointing to a spot that's a kind of adjacent to the middle of the county building, maybe.
Yeah.
Side of the county building.
It was near the far end of where the camp was. And then later demonstrators sort of regrouped up on the walkway behind the courthouse, and there was a line of riot police stretching all the way up from the river to the Bowling Green. And there were a group of police officers behind the line that were sort of having a little meeting and pointing at people in the crowd, and a group of four officers sort of detached from that and walked around behind where Gabby and Joel were, and then just sort of very quickly moved in and grabbed Gabby and Joel.
Did the line of riot police advance on them? Because I heard that reporters were running in the other direction.
The line of riot police were sort of periodically advancing. They would get a command, and they'd move sort of 10 feet forward at a time or so. But when Gabby and Joel were actually grabbed, it was these four police officers coming from the other end. And this was after, at one point, there had been a group of police had broken through the riot cop line and chased down. Presumably, they were trying to grab Gabby and Joel at that point, too. They had chased some people down, and everyone got away. The cops went back behind the line, regrouped, had this meeting, and about 5 minutes later is when this happened, when they actually grabbed.
We know who else was arrested here. It was five people followed by two more, Gabby and Joel.
There were a couple of people that were in the process of packing up a tent. I didn't see that incident, so I don't know exactly what happened there. Those are the only other ones I knew.
You've been talking with?
Rather not say.
Give me a pseudonym.
Bill.
Thank you, Bill. Did you photograph any of this or get any documentation?
Yeah, we have a video of Gabby getting hit. We have a video of Gabby and Joel both being arrested, and we've got a number of photographs of other things that were happening.
How pleased
are you? Oh,
you've got a video. Okay, so I guess we have a video of this. These other two arrests.
This is your confederate in crime, a videography. Trying to discredit our police department again, are you?
Yes, definitely.
Well, here are some police officers coming to arrest you.
Yeah.
So how soon were you on the scene with this?
We showed up here about 7:30 this morning. We got a text from the text tree at 7:15, and we were in Capitola, so we just hopped in the car and drove down.
When you first arrived, what did you see?
There was a line of police officers and sheriffs standing along the walkway, and a large number of people sort of packing up their camps and just sort of milling about in the camp. And then there was a line of police stretching from the jury area down towards the river. And so we got here and helped as many people as we could move their stuff out of the camp. And then the cops began advancing.
How much time did the police give people to move?
From when we got here, probably 20 minutes, 15 minutes?
You could have allowed them to stay here.
Yeah, I don't know. 15 minutes maybe? From when we got here, that they were sort of already in formation, and then they began moving rather slowly through the camp. They would advance 10 feet and stop, and then advance 10 feet and stop. And
did they hit anybody in that process? Or destroy any property?
They were tearing down the tents with, it's not the way that I would take down a tent. And the only person that I saw getting hit was Gabby, sort of immediately after Honey's tent got taken down. They had their nightsticks out, and one police officer was threatening using pepper spray on demonstrators that weren't backing up quickly enough.
Name of the police officer?
I did not get the name of the police officer.
Were you also a witness to this?
And just a quick intercession here, just adding something. Indy Bay just had a posting by Solidarity. That's the name of the poster. Support needed for Occupy Santa Cruz arresters. Six people are currently being held in jail after the morning's raid on Occupy Santa Cruz. Arrestees are being held on $25,000 bail, one exception being held on $50,000 for obstructing a police officer, a minor charge given the outrageously high bail. And that's true. Obstructing a police officer may mean something like you're taking a picture, you're too close to them, you don't respond to an order quickly enough. It's one of those kind of template charges that's thrown up if they don't have a real charge and they want you to respond to something they're doing in a way that you feel it maybe is inappropriate, that you're not really committing a crime by not so responding, but they can still tie you up. Initially, the threat of arrest is often enough for people to say, oh, yes, sir, three bags full. I think probably in this situation, I don't know what the actual specifics of the charges are, and I don't know which, I guess two of the people are probably Gabrielle and Joel are being held in jail. I'll try to give more information about this when I hear it as I get it. And again, there's going to be more coming up on Indy Bay. This is the most recent story on Santa Cruz Indy Media. Since police in the city are trying to create connections between these people and others to the building takeover at 75 River Street, it is unclear how long these six will be held on false premises. Arraignment will be held as early as Monday, December 12th, at which time they may or may not be released from custody. These people, so there is an arraignment date on the 12th. These people, oh, that's pretty far in the future for an arraignment date. I guess bail has been set. That means people have to kick down $2,500, which they will lose, or put up $25,000 as collateral. These people urgently need support. There will undoubtedly be court and lawyer fees, along with the possibility of posting bail, so please donate to the legal fund support, which is found at www.wepay.com/donate/OSC. That's for Occupy Santa Cruz. Again, wepay.com/donate/OSC. Solidarity with the jailed. Fight back against the jailers. And that's more information about that hopefully will be forthcoming.
Mm-hmm. Were you also a witness to this?
To the whole thing?
Right, to the aspect of that we heard Bill talk about.
Oh, I didn't hear the pepper spray part. They definitely had their pepper spray out. And
yeah, he didn't use it. I didn't see him use the pepper spray.
I'm sorry, witness to the general process.
Oh, the general, yeah.
And anything to add? You've heard some of Bill's comments. Is there something that you saw that you might want to add to that? Was there much resistance in the camp to this police activity?
It was just people trying to get their stuff together. They were coming forwards faster than people could pack up their things, and so anything that they couldn't drag out behind them just got run over by the cops, and they couldn't go back for it.
What kinds of things were run over by police?
Everything. They would just trample tents, sleeping gear, saw people's tools, their clothes, food, just everything that people had would just get run over, and anything that was behind the line of cops you couldn't go back to save.
And was anyone other than Honey resistant to the point of not leaving?
No, she was the only one I saw not leave.
And did you see anyone taken into custody other than Joel and Gabriella and Honey?
Yeah, I saw another couple that had been trying to pack up a tent, and they were in the process of picking up their tent, and the cops ran into the tent and started walking across it and then arrested them because they didn't pack up their stuff fast enough.
Do we know their names?
No, I couldn't find out their names.
Do we have a video?
Yeah, I have a video of it, but I don't know their names.
At any point, did people request the police slow down so that they would have time to do their tent packing up?
Yeah, they were frequently asking if the cops could slow down so that they could pack up their belongings.
And who was in charge of this operation. Did any particular police officer declare himself the Führer here?
Not that I heard.
I saw no like official communication. There was no order to disperse after I got here. That may have been issued before I got here, but no one was sort of standing as the spokesperson. The cops were sort of acting in concert. But
now,
yeah.
Were photographers kept back from videoing this process?
They yelled at me a little bit when I was videoing, but the press photographers, they just kind of ignored, and they would say, like, oh, you're not walking backwards fast enough, and, like, say it by name, and just kind of be joking with them. So they were okay with that, but not not anyone trying to document what they were doing.
They seemed quite friendly with Phil Gomez. Surprise, surprise.
Phil, the friend of the... of Zach friend, perhaps. Who knows? I had heard that at least one Occupy Santa Cruz photographer, Chris, tried to video, and he was unable to get through the lines. They'd blocked off the footbridge, and they'd blocked off other areas. People couldn't reach the area, so he had to go across the river to video. Do you have any information on this?
The footbridge was definitely blocked off. I don't know anything about...
terrorists from hurling flaming missiles, perhaps.
Clearly, yeah.
Or possibly old backpacks. Did you see anything about people being kept, you know, away from the scene? And if they were, why were you allowed in? Why did you get special privilege?
I think we just got there early enough.
What is your name, madam, for our records?
Oh, that's okay.
We'll call you Grinsky.
I couldn't see about, like, on... I don't know what side, but the court side, I guess. I don't know how they were blocking it off so people couldn't get through. But I definitely saw them along the different bridges. And then I saw some of their cop cars parked on the street behind the park also, watching people. So they were, like, all around.
So how long did this whole operation take, Minsky?
God, I'm not sure. How long do you think we were here?
I can tell you.
Oh.
And Bill consults his cell phone, possibly also a concealed weapon for those officers who have to deal with it.
Hold his hand clear.
Yeah.
It's a big red cell phone disguised as a cell phone.
That's a playwright talking. We won't get into that.
We were here from about 7:30 to about 8:45.
And at the time you left, let me put it this way. What scene did you see?
When we left, most of the camp, well, all the people had been cleared out of the camp, and ranger trucks had come in and were loading people's gear up into the trucks. And people had mostly cleared out of San Lorenzo Park and across the street. That was basically
most important of all. Did the Sentinel get those key photos of all the feces, needles, and debris that the homeless people flung about the area in their attempt to spoil the environment?
Their photographer seemed very smug about the beautiful, powerful images that he got.
He was very excited about the awesome photos of people crying that he managed to get, and he got some. I forget what else he said, but
he catch any of the baton action?
No, I'm sure he didn't see the police do anything.
I don't think Sentinel cameras actually work on cops.
We are in a state of national. We are on yellow alert. No, purple alert. I'm not sure about the color at the moment. But, you know, there are warships off the coast of Syria. We could be at war again, or the sub-war again any moment. So let's keep that in mind. Mr. So-called Patriot, who won't give his name to us. Very interesting, don't you think? Okay, and we've been talking with Grinsky and
Bill.
Thank you both. Do you wish to say who you are, sir?
I'm another anonymous supporter.
Anonymous supporter. What did you observe over
there? Anonymous supporter supreme. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, there you are. ASS.
Yeah.
You were over at the Parks and Rec Department across from City Hall. What have you seen that's brewing over there?
I see that there are several police in at least semi-riot gear expecting perhaps some visitors.
Well, you can't be too careful with these armed campers. They may show up with their tents at any time.
And it should be said here that this conversation I was having with a group of people right next to the what had been the River Street campground area in front of the county courthouse, and was now just a fenced-in area that was being sprinkled, a lawn area. And what this anonymous person is talking about, I don't know if everybody wants to remain anonymous, but there you are. The fear that's being spread by these police raids is pretty intense. He said he was over at the Parks and Rec Department, which was the focus of our meeting. We were planning to and did walk over to the Parks and Rec Department later. He said that there was quite a gathering of police officers, which we learned was substantial. I think there were, we'd heard, I think the numbers anywhere from 10 to 20 were there waiting. I didn't see them when I drove past. I just saw one police official and a couple of reporters. But, well, you'll hear more as we proceed.
Agreed.
Indeed.
Yes.
And how many were there? Was Danette Shoemaker's representative there to advise people of the validity of her most recent evacuation order?
No, I didn't see that. I believe she's in San Francisco now, making sure that Rana Gulch is duly taken care of.
Ah, yes. To develop areas that need to be developed in Santa Cruz.
Yes.
Provide more police pathways so that we can be protected as we need to be.
Yes.
Anything else you've observed, or as an anonymous observer or supreme?
Not at the moment. No, it's this encircled free area now down here on the county land, the city land, excuse me.
Yeah.
I just see people flocking to it now that the city has opened it up.
Well, they're kind of wetting it down so people can engage in mud wrestling if necessary. Figuring, you know, it's more fun than, you know, getting beaten with batons or having your tent crushed. It's, you know, actually, we're looking at the area where the people were camped, and we're seeing a large circled orange net fencing, not unlike the fencing that fenced off the farmer's market's
yes,
drum circle at one time. So you might say this is a... Spent the way of the drum.
Recycling the fence as part of the city's recycling project, I believe.
There you are.
Nice.
You are, Bob. I mean, anonymous.
Yes. Yes.
So, thank you. Anything else you wish to add before we leave you?
No, that's it. Thanks for your show, Robert.
Oh, thank you, Mass.
Bill,
you say that one of these mastermind criminals has been, again, released at large to menace the populace.
And I'm shaking in my boots right now.
Both of us are really worried. Go ahead.
Yeah, so what I heard, and this was on the text tree again, was that she was released.
She being?
Gabby. Wildcat.
Wildcat. The evil mastermind behind 75 River Street and numerous other terrorist actions in this area.
And an alias to make all of us jealous. Yeah, but no, so I had heard that she was released on...
For those who don't catch my sarcasm, I have no indication that Gabriella, also known as Wildcat, was behind 750 River Street, or that any particular individual was behind 75 River Street, except that the police department is trying to use this, again, as a sort of a smear tactic and a terror tactic to... crush protesters who are main organizers of Occupy Santa Cruz. So, lest there be any doubt by anybody listening to this audio file, which is archived, and for those who want, they can go to the archive at huffsantacruz.org, and for better or for worse, that includes police officials and grand juries, and anybody who wants to hear what I've said. I stand by what I'm saying. I think that... I have no indication or evidence of any kind of involvement of any of these people in any planning. I wasn't involved in it. I don't know anything about it. And I wasn't informed of any of this. And if I give any impression that I was, apologize, because that's not the case. We have a caller. I'd hate to have to be saying these kinds of things, but, you know, these are the times we live in. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hi, Robert. It's Uncle Dennis.
Hey there, Uncle Dennis. I did get a phone message from you that you might be coming in late for your next show at 8 o'clock from the cream to the dregs.
Thank you for getting that message, and I'm just confirming that you got it. So We'll see you around, buddy.
What, are you, for me. Before you go, are you prepared to confess your part in the 75 River Street takeover, Uncle Dennis?
I had absolutely nothing to do. I wasn't there.
Tell us another one. Uh-huh. Yeah, very good. Thank you, Dennis. So we'll tell that to Chief Vogel.
Bye-bye.
So, on with this tape, and again, we're listening to tape from about 12 hours ago at the county building as people prepare to walk to the Parks and Rec Department. There was really a small group of us, and a number of people felt it was ill-advised to even go down there because there were so few of us, but the Sentinel had reported, because of a press release issued yesterday by Occupy Santa Cruz, that there was going to be a march down to Danette Shoemaker's office, the Parks and Rec Department. So some of us felt, well, you know, we should go. And also, we wanted to know what had become of the property that had been taken by the police. Some had said it was in a landfill in Aptos. So we wanted to find out just what was going on.
$100 bail, and the charge is obstruction of justice.
I'd say it's obstruction of just them, actually. Yeah. Really. And so the other, what about the evil Joel currently being, thank God, held behind bars, lest he, try to help other people remove their belongings again?
As far as I know, the good people of Santa Cruz are still safe from the likes of him.
Thank God.
And as for Honey, I don't know. And actually, I don't even know. I don't know Honey personally. I've been using this name because I've heard people call
her. That's the name she uses. If you're talking an African-American woman.
I mean, yeah, but that was what
she told me. She wasn't going to leave, and apparently she kept her word.
She did not, yeah. So it was very powerful, too. I mean,
we're talking again about the incident this morning when, if you look back a day, in the course of the last day or two or three, several hundred people have been driven from the place they were living, vulnerable people, some of them pregnant women, two of them at least, some of them elderly people, by the Santa Cruz Police Department, with no place to go.
She was just kept saying, this is her home, and
hell
she's
no,
not going
I
anywhere.
Won't go.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
Tom, you're wearing a sign? No, you're holding a sign.
Holding a sign.
Now, why does our government spend our money truncating our First Amendment rights, attacking 10 tents, sleeping bags, and people peaceably assembling? What's the answer to that question?
Because the government's representing the interests of people who own massive amounts of private property and who are afraid of losing that private property or seeing a world where things are fair and they're not entitled to at all. So private property is become the most sacred idea there is, and the police have to enforce the sacredness of the private property.
And you don't believe in the God of private property?
No, I don't.
God. I think that happened. I may have to talk to you, my son. This could be a serious error. Your soul is in danger now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. There are some well-known towering intellects, is Ayn Rand and Murray Rothbard and all the anarcho-capitalists.
Ryan Coonerty of Next Week.
Ryan Coonerty. Yeah, I mean, I
our
guess,
mayor, I might add, at least until the next council meeting.
Dallas, somebody who respects private property and kneels at the altar of private ownership, and
he's part of the Bookshore books. They own bookstores downtown, as I understand.
Yes, they do.
Bookshop Santa Cruz.
Yes, Bookshop Santa Cruz. I'm not offended. Yes, I think, I don't know, I mean, it really has amazed me. Just, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of this battle is going to be over private property, and I think as soon as people realize the human suffering that's incurred by protecting
objects. You want to take everybody's private property. What's mine is mine, and what's mine is yours, or something like that. I don't know. What's yours is, well, in any case, you're not a fan of private property.
No, I mean, small possession, photo albums, things like that. Yeah, I think there should be a very well-established set of communal rules protecting people's possessions like that, you know, for the sentimental value they have or the emotional value. But large-scale private property holdings in any city or town or nation, I completely disagree with.
Is that what's made America great?
No, that's been
I mean, that's really, it's sort of the thing to get around, I guess, in studying American history. When you look at slavery and Indian removal policies, you know, like Andrew Jackson or things like that, a lot of it has to do with privatizing land and developing commerce in areas that were formerly anarchist communities or, you know, organized in a much, much different way.
All right.
Enough of this trashy anarchist theory. Thank you very much.
Craig will lead us to the promised land. We need your guidance here. Since there's no place to live anymore here, you can perhaps the jury assembly room would be.
I don't know who he is.
He's the lieutenant who directed the the county built trespass stuff. He's the guy who had the conversations with people, you know, in the atrium.
So the mighty march is setting off at 5:01.
And we have first alarm, parking control, a group of six police officers.
We're following you, buddy.
I can show you some really beautiful waterfalls.
All right. So, with a couple of sheriff's vehicles here, and we are now passing the county building. So, Jack, why are you on this march?
I
think really because
putting people in the armory.
You know, if you're going to show up, why show up for one day? You know,
federal money. Come on, join us, guys. It's your paycheck.
If it's going to,
come on, you can do it.
If it's going to continue to live, then I think it has to have people willing to show up and go.
Here's the evil Noah, the man you wanted to talk to. And joining us at last. Let me talk to you.
We're talking with Daniel Moreno.
And Daniel, we're standing here along the levee walkway across from Trader Joe's, and you lost stuff today.
I've been sick the last 2 days. It was my birthday yesterday, and I woke up, went to the bathroom, and when I came back, they had formed a line, a riot line, and they wouldn't let me get down to get my things. So I walked away with some trunks and a T-shirt.
What did you lose?
Oh, I lost everything from pictures of my family to my lights for my bike. My bike got stolen the other night. My cart that goes in the back of my bike, my drum, my conga that I paid $200 for. I lost everything. I lost my dignity. I lost my pride.
And you lost your tent, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. Everything was in the tent.
Now,
but it's just stuff. It's just stuff, you know? They can't take what you won't give them. And that's whatever it takes to keep you alive.
How long have you been in Santa Cruz?
I've lived here most of my life, since I was in second grade.
Well, a supporter of the police or the supporter of the idea of moving people on would say, well, why didn't you move? They told you to move.
Because I was too sick to move. And, you know, everybody looks out for themselves and nobody cares about their brother, you know. They're not their brother's keeper. When it comes to them surviving or you surviving, you know, usually they pick the latter. Or usually they pick them, you know, to survive.
Yeah.
So
are you going to be coming to the General Assembly tonight? You're coming along on this march? You're just going to try to pull some shit together?
I'm going to do what the masses do, and that's just huddle up, stay warm, and figure out what the next plan is, and try to do it, get it right, and do it right the next time. And, you know, whatever that is. Right now, it's just stay warm, I think. You know?
During the day it's nice, but during the night it's pretty damn cold.
It's going to be real cold, yeah. One of my friends ended up getting most of his stuff, so I'm going to use one of his sleeping bags and just try to make it through the night.
We've been talking with
Dan Moreno.
Thank you, man.
Okay.
So we're talking with Jack. And Jack, you were in charge of the cleanup that was organized by Occupy Santa Cruz the evening before to make sure that the area used by the campground was left in good condition.
Yes, that's correct. We voted at the General Assembly, and agreed upon a time to meet the following morning. The only reason we didn't do any work on it the night before was because there was no light. We weren't adequately protected. We didn't have gloves. And we're unsure of what might be in the trash or on the ground. And having no desire to have anyone hurt, we decided that it would be better to do it first thing in the morning, sunrise or as soon thereafter as possible. So that night, last night, we actually went down to Home Depot and they were gracious enough to give us a 10% discount on the heavy-duty construction bags that we needed to bag up the trash and clean up the park. And this morning when we arrived at 7 a.m., there was a reporter there who saw me carrying the boxes, clearly marked heavy-duty construction bags, trash bags, and overheard a conversation indicating that, you know, okay, when are people going to be here and so on.
Did you do the trash disposal?
Meaning people for the cleanup crew. And the plan was to gather our own occupied people, and as we worked our way through the camp to get help and assistance from anyone else that was there and willing to help and get up. And
were people asleep at this point, or were they awake?
People were mostly asleep at this point in the camp.
And we're talking about the next morning. The General Assembly consensed on folks to help clean up the camp completely, to leave the area in as much as possible in the condition it was in before the camp arrived, even though the kind of problems created were certainly in significant part due to the police raid here, as well as restrictions on the use of sanitation facilities early on, as well as restrictions on sanitation facilities now. You know, as I said, the porta potty was handcuffed shut with plastic handcuffs. I walked by and saw that myself this about noon today. Again, so what you're hearing is his discussion of what happened when people arrived around 7 o'clock this morning to try to do the cleanup that they had arranged to do.
Possibly present.
Well, at that point, the police were gathering and staging in the parking lot of the county jail, and we had no idea that they were there. I had come from a different direction, and I didn't know they were there. But apparently, this reporter did, because as soon as he saw me with the bags and overheard that we were going to clean up
the reporter,
I have no idea.
Male or female?
Male. Somebody said, I don't know, one of the guys back there said he recognized him. But, you know, as soon as he heard that, he pulled his phone out and gave me a smile and turned around and started dialing. And the next thing you know, we get somebody else that comes up from across the street and said, hey, the cops are staging. There's like hundreds of them across the street, and they're getting ready to be over here. So, you know, I mean, I can make assumptions all day, but, you know, he tipped the cops off that we were there and we were ready to start cleaning up. And apparently the cops didn't want that to happen. It's just my own speculation.
So what happened next?
Well, I tried to get people up, went through the camp, pounding on tents and waking people up, letting people know you got to get up, you got to get moving, warning people that action was imminent.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was an imminent threat to health and safety, but the interesting thing was the threat was the police.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, they were staged and ready to go. There was no way that they were going to allow us to clean up. You know, it's they lost the confrontation at the bank, and having done that and been embarrassed, there was no way that they were going to allow us to look good in any way, shape, or form in front of the world or the media, local or otherwise. So they marched. As soon as they saw our intent, they marched.
And what describe how that went, how that happened?
Well, they came through from two directions. One was underneath the bridge, and the other was across the street. And they came through underneath the bridge, three abreast, riot gear on, batons out, lockstep, giving orders. Lieutenant was ordering people to back up, to get out of the way.
Do we know the name of the lieutenant?
The one that just passed us by there in the...
Craig Wilson?
Yes.
But he's a deputy.
I don't know. It was a lieutenant. If it wasn't him, he sure looked like him.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, if that wasn't him, it sure looked like him.
Mm-hmm.
But they... at that point, we didn't have a choice. They're in our face, and they're like...
You abandoned the garbage collection, try to help with people's effects collection.
Well, I was trying to get people up and let people know that, you know, it's, danger is imminent. You know, you need to get up now, and you need to be aware that cops are going to be here, and they're not here for fun. So, and then I was like... ordered to back up.
God rest ye merry gentlemen, but not in Santa Cruz. Mayor Ryan has a sleeping ban. He'll cite you if you snooze. And if you're warm beneath your quilts, your blankets you shall lose. Bad tidings, not comfort or...
And this is Becky Johnson singing a Christmas carol for the homeless at the San Lorenzo footbridge where we were raising issues and inviting people to join us. Actually, we're in front of Dell Williams Jewelers.
Oh, well, this is the business that's owned by the president of the Downtown Association, Dell Williams Jewelers. They represent one of the most anti-homeless businesses in the city of Santa Cruz. They have pushed every anti-homeless ordinance that we're trying to deal with today, many which truncate the civil rights of homeless people and the regular members of the public as well. I might also add that there's a family connection between the owner. Yeah, the owner is the wife of the current mayor, Ryan Coonerty. And, no, well, he'll be May the 13th, I think he's out. He's the lame duck mayor, Ryan. Lame duck mayor Ryan Coonerty. Yeah, that's who he is.
Yep.
That's all they want in the park is ducks, not people. I think that's...
He got a bid of $50.
Quack. Yeah, dang it. Well, it wasn't that song. What was it?
And we have the occasional gap in the tape here, but you are tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM. I'll get that right one of these times. And we are listening to some tape from earlier today when we were walking to the Parks and Rec to talk with Dennett Shoemaker, who was actually, or her assistant, to get some indication of what... the reasons for the evacuation notice given to the people in the park, and also for her refusal to allow an appeal on that. It is true that Attorney Ed Frye did go to court to try to get a temporary restraining order against this action, but that was a super judicial attempt to stop this raid by the police that should have been put into a 10-day context unless Dennett Shoemaker could indicate clearly why this was an imminent, life-threatening situation. And I don't think she ever showed that particular situation clearly, at least, and actually not even clearly. There was no attempt made. It was just simply asserted. And that was... quite unfortunate. So you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 101.3 FM. Again, we've moved to 101.3 FM. And listening to some tape from earlier today, we did make it to the Parks and Rec Department, and I'm seeing now that some of this stuff didn't get recorded. Occasionally, I fail to push the appropriate buttons on my machine. I'm not just technologically archaic, but technologically challenged. We do have a caller, though. Let's see if we can actually manipulate the dials here to get that person on the air. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hi, Robert. As you're talking some legal stuff there, I'm hearing these people aren't going to be arraigned until the 12th.
Yes. How many? Who do we know who's in jail there, caller?
No, I don't know. I just rumors went out.
And where are you getting your information from?
No, I just said rumors. I just look on the.
Oh, you're passing on some rumors for us?
No. I was going to say. I mean, they have. This was a warrantless arrest, and with a warrantless arrest, they have 48 hours for a judicial determination of probable cause, or you have a federal claim against them.
Let me ask you, caller, are you at the General Assembly by any chance?
Oh, hell no.
Oh, dear, because I know that probably there's some more information coming out there, but what is it you'd like to pass on to us here?
I just said, I mean, normally they arrest you. They, you know, putting you in jail over the weekend is not an excuse. They have 48 hours to produce a judicial determination of probable cause for a warrantless arrest. They need to do that, or these people have grounds for a civil suit against the authorities.
Mm-hmm.
And as well, also, I'd like to mention all this ridiculous amount of money they're spending on this. I mean, that money is being spent for these clowns anyways.
For what clowns?
The police. They get paid anyways. They're just sitting around, whether they're eating donuts or, you know, dressed up in riot gear.
Well, so therefore, they could be put to good use by terrorizing protesters, don't you think?
It's ridiculous. The real criminals in this town are these overpaid bureaucrats. They're going to retire on 90% of their salary. So eventually our whole budget will double because we'll have to hire new people and we'll have a bunch of clowns sitting around collecting ridiculous pensions. That's who's really stealing from this town. Because all I'm ever seeing on all these posts on the line about this is how Occupy cost the city all this money. No, it did not. It actually saved, by their screwy logic, it probably saved them a few million dollars because most of the criminals were in San Lorenzo preying on the occupiers.
Hmm. You mean the police?
The police the police were praying. No, they weren't really there that much. The sheriff's hassled a little bit. I'm talking about the, junkies and meth heads.
Mm. I mean, yeah, there was a certain amount of theft happening there. Anyway, anything further, your thoughts on this?
No, you can get back to your tapes. Oh, one more thing. By the way, Free Radio is going broke. We'll be off the air by March 1st unless we get some donations or people sign up to have shows of their own.
Yeah, indeed, and if you want to donate, you can reach us at freakradio.org and pay and donate there, or you can donate in other ways as well, and you can find out how by going to freakradio.org. Thank you, caller.
All right, keep up the good work.
Thanks, man. Bye-bye. All right, let's hear some more from the infamous walk to the Parks and Rec. Yeah, hopefully it'll come on the line soon. I think it, this is... I'm waiting. Here we go.
Oh, boy.
We're watching six police officers surrounding one photographer and a chief of police overseeing this entire thing.
Now, we have a really unfortunate break in the tape, and I guess Chief Vogel is wiping his brow in relief. We were greeted at the Parks and Rec Department by Chief Vogel, and unfortunately, this portion did not get properly recorded. Or perhaps it did, but I haven't yet been able to recover it. But in any case, Vogel did tell Jack, who was very concerned about the property, that it could be picked up at the police department on... 2 days a week, and if and during the 45-minute periods when that was allowed, although he said it was more than that, longer periods. In fact, it's about an hour and a half a day on those 2 days when the property is open. Why is it such a limited time? Don't ask me. It's peculiar. They don't mind spending huge amounts of money outfitting police and riot gear to troop around to intimidate people, but if to help people who've actually had their property taken, a very little time is allowed. It seems to me part of a structure that's designed to terrify people and to frighten them into submitting to whatever edict of the moment comes down. I mean, that's I guess the nature of bureaucracy often generally. But Chief Vogel then went across the street. We met in front of the Parks and Rec. And he there was a photographer, Alex, who takes a lot of good pictures. He was taking photos of the police officers, of which there were seven in a line, apparently afraid that the four or five of us would, most of us over the age of 45, some over the age of 65, would, you know, I don't know, attack us with, you know, attack with our geritol. I don't know what they were, why so many police. I guess they were thinking they were going to bring tents and set up tents in front of the Parks and Rec Department. A lot of these are either aggravated fears or deliberately misconceived and mispresented claims to the public in order to, it seems to me, to justify this kind of whatever police power they're using. So, and the point was, Alex was held suddenly by six police officers, detained, and we shouted across the street, "What's going on?" And we were told by Chief Vogel that if I crossed the street, I would be charged with jaywalking, even though I realized afterward that that was an idle threat. If you walk across a street, not at a crosswalk, provided you are between two streets not controlled by a traffic signal or a police officer, that's not jaywalking. Jaywalking is very specifically defined. So I allow myself to be intimidated by Chief Vogel. And indeed, one of the things the chief said to me in my discussion with him was that I had been seen either going into or being in the 75 River Street building, and that that was going to be something that I would have to in some way pay for. He didn't quite use those words, but and I suggested to him, you know, was he aware that, you know, was he going to charge both Catherine Byers and me with that? Catherine Byers is a councilwoman who was also inside the building, as was Martine Bernal, the city manager. A lot of people went inside that building, and it was a while before the police actually posted it with no trespassing signs. So there's a lot of threats being thrown around, and I'm, you know, it seemed to be police now holding people on this huge bail. According to the Occupy Santa Cruz website, leads me to be apprehensive that indeed the police are going to start using truly bogus charges and huge unjustifiable bails against people who haven't committed any crime simply because they want to remove them as political protesters. You know, I've been concerned that this has been used a bit in the past. It was used against me in 1988. When I was arrested at city council and held on the charge of so-called false information because my legal name is Robert Kahn, whereas the name I've been using as a writer is Robert Norris, but I've never used it to avoid justice, at least never been using it to avoid justice in terms of anything that... Using a name to avoid justice means you don't give your real names to avoid tickets or charges, and that's never been the case here in Santa Cruz. So it worries me that the wheel is coming around again, that this kind of harassment really looks like it may be happening, and that's a matter of some concern. I'm going to try to get an update from activist Steve Plaich, if I can get his new number properly. I actually knew his old number, but his new number is, there it is. Let's see if I can give him a quick dial, and maybe he will have... be available to give us his update, always done from his unique perspective. Let's see how we're doing here. Having a little trouble getting the phone to ring. Let's try it again. Let's see here. There we go. We only have about 10 minutes left in the show, so I'm kind of hoping. Let's see. We do have an incoming call. That could be old Steve calling in. Hi there. You're on Free Radio with Robert.
Oh, Robert. Here in Shepherd Reporter, Steve Plaich, reporting live from the General Assembly and the Water Street steps to the courthouse.
I got to ask you, if you are on the Water Street steps to the courthouse, are you not, in fact, a misdemeanor in violation of the trespass law?
No, in fact, we just talked to the deputy sheriff who ceded us an extra hour because we were being peaceful and was because we were being nice demonstrators.
Now, wait a minute. How can the police officers at Liberty can change the posting of the law? What's going
Evidently,
on here?
He contacted, whoever it was, contacted his chain of command, and they said that we could remain here for one extra hour.
Oh, how sweet.
The entire minute.
So you have another 10 minutes before you become criminal, eh?
Exactly.
Well, I hope you show some respect for the law and get your butt off that area before it's too late, Steve.
Well, I'm off that area as we speak, so I'm covered.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear it. See, we wouldn't want you to be taken away. But what happened at the General Assembly? I've heard that there were at least six people on jail and $25,000 bail?
Well, there were, I think, four people, or five people from Occupy who were arrested for obstruction of justice. Gabrielle and Joel are still in jail. They'll be in jail until Monday when they'll go to arraignment at 8:30, I think Ed said, is when the arraignments are in Superior Court here. They are being represented, as I understand it, by Allison Cole, so she will be able to help them in so far as she can at the arraignment on Monday. But they're going to be in jail until Monday unless $25,000 bail or some part thereof on bond is raised.
Now, is $25,000 the usual cost for the so-called obstructing an officer charge?
I wouldn't have any idea. Well, many of us thought that that was an unusual bail amount, but I have no way of knowing whether or not those are simply the charges for obstruction of justice, whether there was something else involved, whether the district attorney said that there are other charges pending and so the bail should be raised. We just don't know.
Now, what about the other people in jail? The three others, you say?
The three others, and nobody knew their names, and there was one other person who was unrelated really to the Occupy. She was arrested for a felony warrant, and apparently she's being held on $50,000 bond. So, nobody knows who that is.
Charming. So what else? So having found this, of course, there was a mass move to storm the jail and free the prisoners, correct?
Well, we haven't really been discussing that. It's hard to do a mass anything when you have, 25 people. So
there were only 25 people at the General Assembly, eh?
I would say that there maybe 30, I guess.
So it was a really small
assembly. We had a good... A good General Assembly. We're just finishing up now, talking about the Defense Appropriations Bill was the last thing on the agenda, as you know, so we're talking about that.
Yeah, that's the bill that makes everybody under military control
exactly
without
right,
charges
yeah.
And
so
and so forth.
They're talking about actions to write your Congress members and write the President.
Write your Congress
members,
yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We're also talking about, I guess we're going to do something in solidarity with is it Cherry Carnival and those folks do something on the 17th of December up at the recruiting office? Is that time again of the year to do that?
I don't know. I hadn't heard anything about it. Sherry is, of course, a peace activist of long standing. But what about the, was there anything, related to the events that have happened in the last few days around Occupy Santa Cruz?
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody gave their accounts of what had happened throughout the day, so we kind of had a chronology and discussion because people were here at different points during the day. So, we just kind of did talked about it and reflected upon it, and we're trying to see how we're going to move on from here.
What did you learn from that assembly, Steve, if anything, from those accounts?
Well, that Occupy Santa Cruz is still alive and kicking.
Yeah, aside from the cliches, anything specific that you didn't know before that, you want to pass on to us?
People are coming up with different ideas about how we're going to move forward. There have been suggestions that some people have some property that we can use and maybe reform our ranks again. There's some talk about maybe people being able to donate some buildings where we can have indoor GAs and that kind of thing. Yeah, a lot of it is discussions about the weather-dependent aspects of what we're doing right now because, as you know, it's really cold out here and it's really dark. And even though we're going to continue to have the GAs every night, and now they're moving to 2 o'clock on Saturday as well as Sunday, that kind of thing is hard to sustain. And, we shouldn't be complaining about the weather here in California, considering I'm sure what they're experiencing in Washington, D.C., and New York, and places like that.
Are people planning?
Nevertheless, it makes it more difficult to get people out and hold your discussion
right.
And really form strategy
are people
when you're outdoors
and
you're freezing.
Are people planning to be there tonight, for instance, through the night?
There was some talk about a couple of folks who were tired of the abridgment of their constitutional rights and were considering maybe staying here and taking a ticket or perhaps an arrest, but I really can't confirm them.
Uh-huh. Any upcoming marches or rallies? I know there's a Port of Oakland shutdown plan for Monday, and then there's going
right.
to be some caravanning around that. Anything else?
No, I think the next thing, and that was part of a proposal tonight, and that was to have a kind of a candlelight vigil and in solidarity with this December 17th thing, and maybe you can find out more about that. It occurs to me that the Cherry Carnival and those folks, whom you and I have both supported over time, annually have at least one or two demonstrations out at the recruiting office. Unfortunately, you yourself have been involved in that, in fact.
Now, Steve, you've put in a lot of work on the opposing the injunction by the city attorney against for the public nuisance in San Lorenzo Park, and even in researching your own possible injunction to as a counter move in the federal court in this case that was at least tentatively accepted in federal court for a January 4th hearing. I take it that's now moot because the entire campground has been cleared by stormtroopers. How do you feel about that? You put a lot of energy into that. Are you feeling frustrated about that?
Those are the kinds of legal maneuvers that you go through. Sometimes they are not successful, but nevertheless, when you develop a legal strategy, you go with the things you think are potentially going to work. One of the things we talked about at the GA tonight was that those very lawsuits, the lawsuit from the city against Occupy myself, and the lawsuit we filed just recently here yesterday, in fact, against the city and the police department, are really moot because the public nuisance that was that the gravamen of those lawsuits is now non-existent because there's no encampment down there. But one thing we did discuss this evening was the possibility of maybe going into federal court and seeing if we can have these what we feel unconstitutional place, time, and manner regulations have been placed on us here at Water Street, the subject of a federal injunction. So we are going to be pushing forward and working on that.
And are you finding that you're having more legal support? You mentioned that Alistair Cole, a new attorney, has stepped in to try to help out the people being held on what sounds like pretty outrageous bail in jail across the street from where you're standing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see more legal support coming down? You've been skeptical about the National Lawyers Guild. Everyone talks about, National Lawyers Guild, but then they don't show up. Does it look like now that finally something may be happening?
I mean, I'm enthusiastic because, as you know, Ed Fry has certainly stepped up in the last couple of weeks. Alison Cole, with whom I spoke yesterday at our court hearing in Superior Court, is very enthusiastic about supporting Occupy. Even Philip Crawford, who is from the National Lawyers Guild, has returned our calls, so we do have him as a resource. And I'm hoping that, through your contacts, perhaps David Blavet or Kate Wells or people who have experience in federal court, and as you know, they have experience in federal court on your behalf and are excellent attorneys, would be willing to help us out in our seeking federal court help, federal injunction.
I don't hold a lot of hope for that, but I will certainly give them a call and see what they say, no question about it. I'm running out of time here, Steve Plaich. Anything happening in the next few days on homeless issues generally?
I'll be up at the Homeless Service Center tomorrow doing one of my legal clinics, and then we'll just kind of play by ear. I'm hoping that you receive those two documents that I did resend to you to send to David today.
I haven't seen them yet, but I haven't looked very carefully, so I'll take a closer look. What time is your legal clinic for those who wish to check you out?
I'll be up at Riverlea Family Shelter between about 1 and 3 tomorrow.
Okay, and that's at 115 Coral Street?
That is.
All right. Well, Steve Plaich, as usual, thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Take care now.
All right, man. Bye-bye. And that's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides tonight. Uncle Dennis is either not coming in or he's going to be late. I'm not sure which. You may have heard him earlier on the air, and I apologize for being a minute or two late before putting on this an older show of his. He may be in to do a new show and a current show, as he generally does every week. A lot of interesting music, nostalgic music for some of us, as well as updates for Earth First and other environmental issues, which we might not otherwise hear. Certainly I don't listen to them much, but I should, because
it's a regular feature and something we should at least be aware of, if not concerned about. So stay tuned for From the Cream to the Dregs. I will be available at the Huff line, 423-HUFF. Eventually, assuming I'm still at liberty, you never can tell how many people they're going to try to use this 75 River Street nonsense to try to kettle, so to speak, to use a phrase that's been coming out of Occupy Wall Street. People who are prominent or particularly interested in raising these issues of constitutional concern and defending the rights of those to use public spaces in spite of the wishes and dictates of authorities. So if I get hauled away, I expect the rest of you to try to do what you can to preserve the Constitution and to stand up for the rights of people here, including your own rights, lest they fall. I appreciate your being with me on this edition of Bathurst Spears Broadsides. And again, I've got no indication other than threats from Chief Vogel and a couple of other police officers that I'm in any jeopardy. But given this bizarre jailing of two activists, apparently five activists, but two activists whose names I'm aware of, I am alarmed and I am concerned. And I encourage people to consider trying to help them in any way they can. And also to reclaim those public spaces regardless of the threats of police officers who I think really are trying to make sure that people don't do the kind of